It's time for You Talking to Me with your host, Big JD.
That's right. You're listening to You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. My guest this week is registered nurse Carol Deemer, who recently led a group of healthcare professionals to a prestigious Spotlight Best Practice Organization Award. And this award was won for the Windsor Essex Community Health Center as the team focused on a number of best practice programs. And we'll talk to Carol about these programs, her role within them, and her career as a registered nurse. Please welcome CHC's Best Practice Coordinator, Carol Deemer, to the show. Hi, Carol.
Hi, JD. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, it's great to have you. Tell us a little bit about the Windsor Essex Community Health Center.
Well, the Windsor Essex Community Health Center is a newly amalgamated organization. We're comprised of the Teen Health Center on Olette Avenue, Sandwich Health at Felix. It's located behind Forrester High School. We also operate the Diabetes Wellness Center on Lauzon Parkway, Street Health, which is located on Pulitzer, the Chronic Disease Active Aging Program, which runs programs throughout the city and county, and the City Health Center on Windsor Avenue.
And when talking about the Teen Health Center, teens are specific to ages 12 to 24, right? I was kind of surprised that it goes that high.
It goes that high, it does, yes.
Yeah. Too bad it doesn't go up to where I'm at now.
Then you can come to the Sandwich Community Health Center.
And the center also offers a diabetes education to Windsor and Essex through the Diabetes Wellness Program. Can you tell us a little bit about that program?
Sure. It serves the people of Windsor and Essex County by offering education and classes to adults with diabetes. They do some outreach education across the county also. They offer group classes, one-on-one counseling, and they're provided by certified diabetes registered nurses and dietitians and also nurse practitioners. They do a walking program in partnership with the Tecumseh Mall, and they have plans for offering cooking classes on site since they have a new center there with a large kitchen.
Hmm. And you work in the clinic at Sandwich, which is located in the basement of Forrester High School. And it's interesting how many healthcare professionals are actually at that clinic. There's that many there because I was reading the information, and it covers the gamut of...
It's a very small location. It's been there for about 20 years, and there are a lot of interprofessional people who work there. We are a nonprofit organization, and we are providing primary care, health promotion, and prevention to a high-risk population in that area. It was established and governed by a community-elected board, and it's funded by the local health integrated network. And it was established to serve the needs of the clients in the West End. So we have physicians, nurse practitioners, nursing staff, a chiropodist, which is a foot care doctor, a massage therapist, social workers, a pharmacist who provides consultation to the clients. There's a dietitian, a lab technician, and a lot of secretarial staff there. So mm-hmm. It's quite an interprofessional team to provide holistic and comprehensive care to the clients.
Wow. And you've been there 4 years.
Yes. Mm-hmm. New job for me.
Yeah. And you were also at Hotel Du for 24 years?
I was, yes. Wow. I've been nursing for quite a while.
That's a full career right there.
Oh, yeah. I was hired in 2009 at Sandwich to coordinate the Best Practice Spotlight Initiative. And I also work in the clinic as a registered nurse. So I assist the primary providers in assessing the clients. I do immunizations, blood work. We do health teaching. We go out and do home visits to people who are shut in and elderly to see how they're doing. Mm-hmm. And at Hotel Du before that, I graduated in 1984 from St. Clair College, the Diploma Nursing Program, and I started working on the neurosurgical unit. Then I moved to the intensive care unit. I did some clinical research in the intensive care, the respirology trials and psychiatry trials, and then I did a stint in management for 3 years.
Okay. You covered the gamut as well.
I have.
What got you interested in becoming a nurse? You said you went to St. Clair. Was there anything in particular that...
Back in at that time, going to the University of St. Clair, when you graduated, there was real no benefit having the degree or not having the degree at the time. So St. Clair was a two-year program. It seemed to be a bit more fast track. They did a lot of hands-on studying compared to the university, which was a lot more academia. My parents were always interested in the healthcare field. My mom mm-hmm. was interested in the sciences. She would have been something medical had she had the opportunity. I have come from five siblings, and we are all actually nurses, so you can say nursing runs in my family. And my son actually is going to start in September in nursing school.
Congratulations to him. Mm-hmm. And he's here sitting in today. How's it going?
Pretty good.
And, yeah, I was going to ask you if healthcare ran in the family, and it kind of does. It seems you're passionate, just as passionate now as you would have been, you know, all going through that at the time or getting started in nursing, especially with all the new program that you're involved in and everything now. So you were project coordinator for the Best Practice Spotlight Initiative, and that was funded by the Ministry of Health and Long-Term Care and Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. So tell us a little bit about the project, which began in 2009.
Yeah, that was a project. Our CEO at the Windsor-Essex Community Health Center wrote a proposal, and you get chosen to become a Spotlight Organization candidate. They do fund you $50,000 a year over 3 years to help you run the program at your center. So that facilitated hiring myself as project coordinator. So I was then mandated to write reports and get the team going to implement guidelines. So RNAO has come up with about 50 best practice guidelines, and we implemented 12 of them in our organization. So we had like a team of interprofessional staff who chose different guidelines that were based on some services and programs that we already provided at the center. And we were able to provide staff with education out of the funding so they could go attend conferences and seminars and learn more about evidence-based practice, and so that our clients would be receiving the best care.
And you're the first community health center to receive this designation in Ontario?
Yes, we are. So in the past, RNAO predominantly had hospitals and long-term care centers that put in proposals, mm-hmm. because they house the most nursing staff. We being interprofessional, we don't have as many nursing staff as an interprofessional team, but our CEO thought it would be a good thing for us to do since we all work together collaboratively. And over the 3 years, we did implement the 12 guidelines and got the designation in April.
Mm-hmm. And you've also been asked, this is kind of interesting, to mentor other community health teams since the award, I guess. Have you started that yet, or is that something that will be implemented now that this has happened? Or
yeah, I already started in April. Okay. I was asked to go up to Toronto to the new cohort's knowledge kickoff, actually, and to present on interprofessional teams implementing guidelines. And I met the two teams that I'll be mentoring. One is a North Bay nurse practitioner-led clinic, and the Two Rivers Family Health Team in Cambridge will be calling upon me to ask about how we implemented at our site, because we're not as large as a hospital, we don't have as much staff and resources, and they're kind of a similar kind of animal to a community health center, so mm-hmm. they're going to run into the same challenges we did. So I hope that I can help them out.
Now tell me about your appointment to the expert panel for the Minister of Health, the Healthy Kids panel. I just want to talk briefly about that. It's a 17-member panel, and I guess to put forth some recommendations to the government on how to deal with childhood obesity?
Yeah, it was an honor to be selected. There was a call put out by the Minister of Health to the community-based nonprofit sector. So the Executive Director of the Association of Ontario Health Centers put out an email to our CEO and others in Ontario asking for names of registered nurses that might be interested in participating on the panel. So I was encouraged to put my name in, as well as another registered nurse from our organization. We sent in our bios, and lo and behold, my name went forward to the Minister of Health's assistant for consideration. I got a call, had a little interview over the telephone, and next thing I know, I'm on this 17-member panel. The two co-chairs are quite big players in healthcare or in organizations. One is the CEO of Participaction, and the other is the CEO of Children's Hospital of Eastern Ontario. So we're going to be meeting monthly until December to provide recommendations on how to meet a goal of reducing childhood obesity in Ontario. It's a very diverse panel. There's a broad range of perspectives and expertise to address this issue. Mm-hmm. And we hope to develop recommendations that are practical, feasible, and sustainable, and will make a difference. So I go to a meeting Monday, actually, in Toronto.
Cool. And I want to spend some time on childhood obesity a little bit later in the show, but let's talk about the best practice guidelines. For some of the best practice guidelines, or first some of the facts maybe, clinical guidelines have been developed for topics relevant to older persons, adults, adolescents, and children. So it's
Yeah, it's a wide range of therapeutic areas. They wanted to look at primary care. They wanted to look at the elderly. And they looked at some healthy work environment guidelines also. So they had about 50 guidelines. They developed the Registered Nurses Association of Ontario, just thinking that nurses should practice under evidence-based guidelines.
Mm-hmm. And then they're focused on health promotion, disease prevention, and curative topics. So, again, pretty much covers a lot of area.
It does. So if you get a guideline, like we implemented 12 at our center, so 9 clinical guidelines we chose. One was on hypertension. So there's recommendations in it. They do a literature search of the topic of how to manage hypertension. Mm-hmm. So they do all the groundwork. They put forth recommendations on maybe how you should tackle dealing with hypertension, whether you're in a clinic setting or a hospital setting, and then you can look at the recommendations and apply what might work best to your organization. So that's how we did it. So we had 9 of them. We looked at delirium, depression, and dementia in older adults because we do see a lot of elderly at our sandwich site. We did smoking cessation, which we implemented across the organization at the teen center and at sandwich. We did asthma control in children, supporting and strengthening families through life events, the management of hypertension. We did oral health, which our street health program on Pulitzer has really taken a lead on. We do reducing foot complications for people with diabetes, especially at our diabetes wellness center. Women abuse screening, identification, and response is an important one that we looked at, and primary prevention of childhood obesity. Mm-hmm. So those were our 9.
Was there not 12?
The healthy work environment guidelines. We looked at cultural diversity in healthcare and developing cultural competence among our staff because at the West End where we work, we have a lot of immigrants and people of different cultures who come, so mm-hmm. we wanted to be sensitive to that.
Okay.
We looked at preventing and managing violence in the workplace because of a lot of our areas, the street health downtown with the homeless population in the West End. You know, we wanted to look at keeping our staff safe as well as our clients safe who come to seek our services. Mm-hmm. And then we looked at developing and sustaining leadership within our organization because we do have a very healthy organization that kind of values all our staff and lets them kind of grow where they can in the organization.
Great. We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk to you more about childhood obesity. We'll be back right after this.
You're listening to You Talking to Me with Big JD. On CJAM 99.1 FM, redefining radio in Windsor and Detroit.
Do you have an interesting career? Do you have an interesting life experience to share with others? If you'd like to be a guest on You Talking to Me, contact me, Big JD, at the You Talking to Me website. That's youtalkingtome.ca. The letter U, talking, the number 2, me, youtalkingtome.ca.
All right, we're back, and I'm joined by registered nurse Carol Deemer, and we're talking about the best practices program. She's the best practices coordinator with the Windsor-Essex Community Health Center, prestigious award. And I want to talk, actually, one thing I wanted to mention previously, actually, before the break, was that the implementation resources, there are self-learning packages, e-learning modules and videos and things like that. And some of these things, are they available on the website? And
they're available at www.rnao.org, and they are free to all registered nurses. You don't have to be a member or whatever. So, yeah, they do have a lot of learning tools on their website, mm-hmm. and anyone can download the best practice guidelines.
Yeah, that's great that those resources are available for anybody. I want to talk a little bit about childhood obesity. I guess kind of your role within the Healthy Kids panel is to bring childhood obesity down 20% over the next 5 years. And what are your thoughts on the challenges of that?
That is quite an ambitious target. The Minister of Health said so herself. The creation of the panel is part of the commitment of the ministry to do that, but it does reflect the urgency of the issue. They're hoping that we'll create a comprehensive multi-sectoral strategy by putting forth these recommendations. So the panel met in May as just kind of an opening meeting, and we're meeting next Monday and starting looking at a review of evidence that's out there, and we're going to tap into other experts in the field to come forth with some recommendations. So I'm waiting to see what my contribution will be. I guess I can bring a frontline perspective, a real world kind of what's happening, you know, especially in a smaller community, to the panel when they start coming up with some ideas.
Now, within the guidelines, were you working on, I guess, say these 12 guidelines, were you working on them all throughout the three-year period since it started, or did some come into play, like, you know, as time went on, like, for example, childhood obesity, would you have been working on that through this whole time? Or?
Yeah, what we did, because there was 12 of them over 3 years, we split them up in groups of four, and actually childhood obesity was one of our last four to implement. So in year three, we started on that. But we had teams within our organization who were already doing things with children and with activities and education about healthy eating and things like that. So what we wanted to do was bring it into the clinic. What can we do there? How are we measuring our kids? How are we supporting children and their families when we see them in the clinic as a physician, as a nurse practitioner? You know, what are we doing? Can we hook them up with social work? Can we hook them up with a dietitian to teach them about what they can do? So we're still looking at avenues and what we're going to do to kind of fit what will work for our clients. So,
and how did you guys look at which best practice guidelines that you would work on or that you would choose, or were these created? I mean, were they pulled from somewhere else? And did you do those? Was maybe the group? Were these things that you thought that there's more need for these particular ones, or was it that the group is probably might be best suited for certain ones, or how did that work?
Yeah, I can think of the CEO, when she wrote the proposal, she looked at what programs and services we were running, and then if there was a best practice guideline that was similar to it or exactly like it, that's the ones that she chose for our organization. She also pulled the staff and said, you know, out of all these 50 guidelines, what are your interests? So we were already doing some work on smoking cessation, so using the guideline and ensuring that we were doing the right thing, because it's one thing to say, oh, I'm going to run a program on this. If you don't really investigate it and look up the evidence for it, you could be a little bit off base of where you should be. So knowing that someone did a lit search, has the recommendations put forward, and are reviewing those guidelines, RNAO reviews them every so many years to keep current, then you know that the service you're providing is the best evidence and the best way to care for someone. So I think that's how we did it. So the childhood obesity, we were running some programs earlier on at the center, childhood obesity prevention strategy that the ministry had put out. So it just kind of, things tied in. It was pretty smooth.
Now, let's talk about childhood obesity. Do we know, have any kind of statistics as far as how many obese or overweight children might be in Ontario, or how many will maybe grow up to remain in this condition?
Yeah, I did receive some information that I need to read for Monday's meeting. So they gave me some stats from the Canadian Community Health Survey. It was in 2004, but they were using actual measurements of weight and height of children, and it showed that 8.6% of children aged 2 to 17 in Ontario are obese, and 19% of children aged 2 to 17 in Ontario are overweight. Mm-hmm. So considering these stats are 8 years old, the numbers have probably increased. Also, they gave us some stats from Stats Canada 2007-2009, indicating there's been an increase in overweight and obesity and decline in fitness levels among children and youth in Canada. So there is a prevalence of the problem.
It must also be taxing on our healthcare system overall.
Yeah, our children are our future, so it increases the risk of major chronic diseases in the future. It further impacts our healthcare system. And it's estimated that obesity overall costs Ontario $4.5 billion in 2009.
I'd like to talk maybe a little bit about the health issues you kind of just mentioned related to childhood obesity. And one thing I'm really curious about, too, is I think childhood diabetes is kind of common knowledge. But what about risk of, like, things that you more associate with adults that are overweight and obese, clogged arteries and heart attacks and things like that? Does it happen as well to young people?
Yeah, we're starting to see it. We're starting to see children with high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, the gallbladder gets affected, high cholesterol levels. There's a strong risk for developing stroke. Certain types of cancer, including breast and colon cancer, can happen. You can have bone and joint concerns because of the extra weight you're carrying. Children are having sleep apnea and a lot of asthma. So it's associated also with psychosocial problems like low self-esteem and self-blame, and this can negatively affect children in their academic achievements and social developments. And it's known that about 75% of obese children do grow up to become obese adults.
Mm-hmm. And how about demographic? How does that fit in? Maybe we can talk about some of those points. For one, the unemployment rate locally and how that might factor in.
Yeah, I was looking at some demographics even on males and females with children with obesity. And in 2010, from Public Health Ontario, there were some self-reported stats on body mass index, which is the best way to kind of determine if you're overweight or obese. You take into account your height and weight. And it showed that 31.6% of males versus 21.5% of females reported being overweight or obese. And there are some reports that speak to the prevalence being higher in low-income families due to a variety of socioeconomic reasons, whether not being able to afford certain healthy foods or making poor choices or just being educated on what to do. So the high unemployment rate is also a problem because people can't afford to buy the right things, and it contributes to making poor choices. So,
and even the fact of parents that are working, they may not be home for the kids.
Exactly.
And so the kids themselves are making poor choices or not having someone to make something better for them, perhaps.
That's true.
So let's talk about the roles of those maybe who can help. Obviously, healthcare providers and practitioners is one, like, you know, the initiative that you guys have taken. And then what about schools?
For schools, there's a lot of talk about physical activity in schools. It's optional. Should it be mandatory? There's issues on playgrounds with safety. You see they're taking all kinds of jungle gyms and things away from playgrounds, and the kids have nothing to do when they go outside. Also, is there enough availability of public recreational facilities for children? That can be a problem, too, and the cost of some of those things.
And then what about parents? Is there anything that you guys... you know, do associated with parents somehow, or have, you know, for learning better ideas or choices or ways to do things for them? Or
yeah, really, it starts, JD, prenatally. There's mothers, you know, pregnant females who smoke. There's malnutrition, gestational diabetes, things like that may impact a metabolic programming of a child early on in the home environment, like you said before. Both parents working, nobody home to make a good meal or no time and stressed out. There's income, habits, education and knowledge, access to resources. And a lot of parents I talk to say they're less comfortable with their children playing in the neighborhoods or parks alone because of safety. So it's a different world out there. So there's a lot of factors that contribute to the problem of obesity. And some are modifiable, some are not. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a lot to look at.
And then within all this, there must be some, and you mentioned this in passing as well, sort of the major psychological aspects to deal with, state of mind of obese or overweight kids. They must be pretty stressed and you know, have, like you mentioned, a low self-esteem. How much part of the initiative does, you know, that get factored in as far as, you know, helping kids?
Yeah, I'm not sure how that can be addressed, but I'm sure a lot of bullying and childhood depression comes from having the low self-esteem and having issues related to your size compared to someone else's. So it's something to look at. I don't know how that can be tackled exactly, but in our clinic, if we look at, you know, maybe attaching them to one of our social workers and giving them some support and some family counseling or things like that, that might work, you know, on a frontline level. Globally, I don't know how that's going to work, but it is something that we're aware of for sure.
Yeah, and you mentioned in I guess talking to some parents. Do you talk to parents and obese or overweight children and stuff like that to get an idea of, you know, where to go?
Yeah, that's what the perspective I'm going to bring, because everyone's going to be looking at evidence and research and documentation. So when you look at that, I'm going to be able to bring some real-life stories maybe to it. So you can say, oh, maybe if people do X, Y, and Z, and I can say, well, you know what, I've seen at the front line that, you know, that might not work, or that could work, but maybe there's not enough money, there's not enough resources, or there's not the things are in place to help support people. So mm-hmm. I hope that's how it'll play out.
And have you been working at all or thought about talking to local exercise facilities and maybe any kind of a role that they may be able to play or help with within this? Or is that, I mean, I would imagine maybe you look at exercise in some way or another through all this.
Yeah, our own community health center does run certain programs. I can't speak to other things in the city of Windsor, but we do have Fit Kids summer camps. We run at 8 locations for kids ages 5 to 15, and it provides education on healthy eating and shows them exercises and how to get out and be active. It's hard in this day and age with everyone plugged in and iPods and Xboxes and things. Kids are just not out there as much as maybe we used to be in the past. We also then started to find that hitting that age group maybe was too late, and we went into the Leamington Parenting Family Literacy Center and Taylor, Begley, and Marble schools to run Little Fit Kids programs. So our community health workers and human kinetics students and a dietitian run programs geared to parents and caregivers of kids ages birth to 7 years. So we're showing even younger children and their parents how to do developmentally appropriate physical activities and education about Canada's food guide, healthy snacks, and what a child-sized portion really is.
Mm-hmm. And so that would kind of lead me to believe, I guess, that you probably work with other best practice guidelines or others that are working in other areas to somehow find maybe like some common ground or...
Yeah, we do a lot of collaboration, and we do a lot of networking around the city and work with other groups because we are a small organization, and that way we can kind of get the best bang for our buck out there with the clients.
And as well, is the Community Health Center looking for volunteers and things like that for different things that they do? Or
yeah, for sure. We're always looking for volunteers. We have a volunteer coordinator. Her name is Dodie, and she can be contacted at the Teen Health Center site. We can do placement for students for community hours, or we had, you know, volunteers that, you know, help us around the clinics. And we also are very engaged with the University of Windsor and the St. Clair College student community placements for their nursing and social work programs. So we do mentor and precept a lot of nursing students and social work students at all our centers to give them a taste of what it's like to work in the community rather than in a hospital-based mm-hmm. setting.
So how often does your group get together, and is it everybody in the group that gets together at the same time, and is everybody working together on all best practice guidelines? Or
no, it's not that clear cut because it started predominantly at the sandwich site, then mm-hmm. we amalgamated, so we have dispersed some of the guidelines around because we are at different locations. It's we have monthly team meetings where we all can get together, but it's going to be a work in progress now to kind of just keep this going through the organizations. We finished our 3-year term, and now the hope is to kind of disseminate the guidelines and have people pick new ones that might facilitate their areas of work more too. So it's a work in progress.
All right. And can you give us any contact information again for the Community Health Center and for anybody that might be interested in volunteering or checking out guidelines and information?
We do have a website. If you Google the Windsor Essex Community Health Center, and it'll show you the Teen Health Center and the Sandwich Community Health Center site. And you can look up the Teen Health Center and call Dodie there.
Okay, sounds good. Really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show.
Thank you.
All right. And there are so many areas of our health to be concerned with. It can sometimes be overwhelming, but I think the Windsor Essex Community Health Center is a great resource. So take advantage of that resource if you can. Visit theteenhealthcenter.com as well for more information. And next week, we look at a different area of healthcare, energy healing. So don't miss it. I'll see you then. This is You Talking to Me. I'm Big JD. Thanks for listening.